Well, the deal of the week, I mean, two big deals this week. Reynet selling out of its tobacco interest, finally kicking the habit there. And another one that is really huge in the life of Life Healthcare. Interesting that they're both kind of health related, both of those. The one bunch of people have been killing people with tobacco. These guys at Life Healthcare have been saving people with innovation. Peter Wharton Hood joins us. He's the CEO. It's a heck of a deal, Pete. Lovely talking to you again. It's been a while. You were previously in banking, and the fact that you even worked in the UK for a period of time must have given you, I suppose, an inside track, given that you've sold your UK operation, and we'll get into it in more detail in a moment, a research and development operation, to a UK business. Having worked in the city, did it give you an advantage?
Somewhat, yes, Alec. I think that international exposure that I got during the course of my time in the UK and the US certainly does help you navigate some of the nuances that are required when you come to put these deals together. But of course, the industry as it is, and the fact that the purchaser Lantheus is listed in the US but has operations around the world, means this was a complex transaction to land. And yes, I think the past experience was helpful.
It's also interesting to see that you love the Achterskot. Now, I think shareholders are probably still trying to work that out in their minds, because often when South African businesses do transactions, they do a deal, they get the money, they walk away. In this case, you could be earning up until 2034. I suppose it's a good segue into finding out exactly what it is, the business that you've sold, and indeed what a hospitals company in South Africa is doing, owning a research and development high-tech business in the UK.
I think there are two questions there. Let's start with the second one. Life Healthcare, we publicly acknowledge that we were not the natural owners of Life Molecular Imaging. The acquisition of Life Molecular Imaging, or LMI as we call it, happened in 2019. We paid the princely sum, 2018, we paid the princely sum of $5 for the asset. It was a research and development organization headquartered in Berlin, a team of really smart scientists that were pioneers in the Alzheimer's diagnostic field, were resident in the fourth basement floor of the Bayer building in Berlin. And that's the genesis of this particular company. The fact it presented itself as a UK-based transaction is where the IP was resident, and that's what we sold. And the counterpart is actually a US NASDAQ-listed company called Lantheus. They chose to use another UK entity to facilitate the transaction. So in essence, this was multi-geography in the way that it was structured. But we always said, as an SA-based hospital group, we weren't the natural owners of the asset. We didn't integrate it into our business. And I publicly said that we would manage it for value, and at the right price it was for sale. You might well say, well, what's the right price and how did we get to the deal structure? I reminded some critics that 2.5 years ago, they said this asset was worth zero. It didn't make a string of beans difference in our market capitalization. A lot of critics said it'll never make money. And we were in the right place at the right time, that the industry started to evolve. Alzheimer's diagnostics started to take shape as a real industry when the therapy for Alzheimer's was approved by the FDA January of 2023. Now all of a sudden we became relevant. In that particular context, the winds blew in our favor and the relevance of the diagnostic got traction. Our sales started to go up and the potential for this business caught the attention of Lantheus. Now you get to the question, why the Achterskot? If one just looks at it in pure investment banking terms, if we held the asset on our balance sheet and we sold doses of Neuraceq over the next 10 years, we'd end up getting value by making the sales happen. The question one asks oneself is, well, how much can we sell over the next 10 years? Very difficult question to answer. You know, given that the fortunes of this company have shifted in the last 2.5 years, well, how much are they going to shift in the next 10? So the Achterskot gives an indication of the fact that we are actually risk-sharing to an extent with the purchaser. They put a chunky piece of money on the table for us up front. But if the product succeeds, it'll be a pleasure for them to pay us. So we are risk sharing it going forward. And that's typical of the industry that we're in, Alec, that it's not uncommon to have a significant amount up front and then trailer payments as the product succeeds. And that's how we structured the deal with it.
Some might have missed that it's $350 million up front. That's billions and billions of South African rands. And then the Achterskot is another $400 million potentially that you're going to earn from a business that you bought in 2018 for $5. Now, you got it. That's a great, we've heard of great private equity investments or great investments. For instance, the fact that Naspers went and bought into Tencent all those years ago and did incredibly well. But this is a big one. This is an incredible return. How was it offered to you in the first place? And who took the decision to go ahead and finance these guys sitting in a small office in Berlin?
Yeah, the genesis goes all the way back to Bayer Pharmaceuticals. That was where this all started nearly 20 years ago. And in the context of got to 2018, you know, there was some sense of viability around Neuraceq and Alzheimer's diagnostics. But Bayer chose to exit. And in that exit, they sold it to Piramal Pharmaceuticals, an Indian-based company, who put substantial amounts of money into the development of Neuraceq. But they also got to a stage where, having spent circa somewhere between $300 and $400 million, also saw that this was non-viable, or felt it was non-viable. And at that particular juncture, they sought to offload it to a company that was prepared to nurture it going forward, not just sort of take a passing interest in it and then throw it away. They actually looked for a company that was going to nurture it. And in chatting to the chairman of Piramal, who I only met during the course of the sales process, he said that was the basis on which they'd chosen, you know, the Life Healthcare Group, that they thought we would take the product seriously. Having bought it for $5, we spent another $100 million during the course of the ensuing 6 years, salaries, research and development costs, licensing fees, sales and marketing, and we built it into a proper company, Alec, that it was one where we invested in IT, governance, finance, technology, sales platforms, incentive arrangements, hiring new skill sets and new people, building out the business in the United States, which basically started from a standing start. And so we did take it seriously. And I guess you might reflect on that and say, well, Life Healthcare took risk. Yes, we did. We took $100 million worth of risk in the context of our belief that that modality would eventually take shape. That was the punt that we took. And in that regard, we have proved to be correct. And with the benefit of hindsight, the returns are spectacular, but they weren't without risk. The risk was well articulated to our shareholders. We continued to invest in the business when a lot of people thought that it wasn't worthwhile. But with the benefit of hindsight, we took the right decision. And in the disposal of Alliance Medical Group, which we concluded during the course of last year, there was an opportunity to sell this business. In December of 2022, there was a walk through the door, passing interest for an insignificant amount of money. I say that with no disrespect. It was sort of £50 million. We said no. And then there was more interest at a bigger number. And then there was detailed roadshows that we went on around the country. We went to took our big South African investors through the viability of the business during the course of last year. And you saw the market capitalization of Life Healthcare start to increase. Then we took the same roadshow material to New York, and there everyone interested in the industry, radiopharmaceuticals, big pharmaceutical companies, was there, and you know, and the penny dropped that this is a viable business, and Lantheus started having conversations with us. They expressed real interest, and so it started to develop.
You mentioned the brand name. Is that well established in the US and European markets?
In the US particularly, Neuraceq is the go-to diagnostic for Alzheimer's disease. During the course of the significant clinical trials that were run around the world, where pharmaceutical companies were researching for a therapy to treat Alzheimer's disease. In diagnosing those early stage patients in order to be able to assess the condition they were in, approximately 80% of all the clinical trials conducted used Neuraceq as the diagnostic instrument. Now, there are two other formidable competitors in the space. GE Healthcare and Lilly also have diagnostic agents in the space. So this South African headquartered company was going toe-to-toe with GE Healthcare and Lilly in the United States. It's quite a heavyweight boxing match to be
in. On the other hand, it also means that this part of your business is now departed. It's great. You're going to potentially get another $400 million in Achterskort over the next few years. But do you have any other jokers in your pack? In other words, any other investments like this that are undercover?
No. In terms of the pharmaceutical industry and radiopharmaceutical research and development, we are out. And in effect, when one looks at Life Healthcare 3.0, the revised business, the focus is Southern African. It's acute hospitals and its complementary services adjacent to the hospital business. And in that particular context, the detailed build-out and delivery of care in the domestic market becomes the focus of a business that is now significantly degeared, streamlined, and impeccably focused on the tasks at hand. We have made an outlying investment that some would suggest was on the fringes of healthcare. We built two cyclotrons in Midrand, and a cyclotron is effectively the equipment that's used to make radiopharmaceutical diagnostic material. And those two cyclotrons that we've built in Midrand become the precursor to us setting up a substantial PET-CT diagnostic footprint in South Africa. Now, the use of PET-CT is a diagnostic tool principally in the oncology space, where it is the most sophisticated form of diagnosing cancer patients. It's used very heavily in the United States, Scandinavia, the United Kingdom, and Western Europe. And in actual fact, in our previously held investment in Alliance Medical, we were the largest provider of PET-CT imaging work in Europe. We took that expertise and we've said that has to come to South Africa at scale. It's inevitable. And in order to be able to put the footprint in place, we've taken that bold decision. We took it about 2.5 years ago, but cyclotrons are big, heavy pieces of equipment. They take a long time to install and get licensed and regulated. And we are ready to be able to come to the marketplace in this new space. When I say new space, this space at scale, and we're excited about it.
And that presumably is primarily for export.
No, what ends up happening, Alec, in the context of radiopharmaceutical diagnostics, you make the material, but it only lasts for a very short period of time, in chemical terms called a half-life. So you actually make it at 2 o'clock in the morning and you inject it into the patient at 8 o'clock in the morning, and you do the diagnostic at 9 o'clock in the morning. And effectively, there is no export, but we could be a pretty attractive market for foreign patients on the African continent to come and seek this type of diagnostic in South Africa. That's well within the context of a business plan that's capable of being built out.
Now, there would be critics who are looking at this and saying, you've just lost your crash boat. South Africa's hospital sector is being threatened by national health insurance. Here you had this formidable business overseas, which has shown it's worth $750 million over a period of time, sure, but that's what you've sold it for. Now that's gone, you are totally focused and totally exposed to the risks that an emerging market, and particularly this emerging market, has and brings along with it. Have you had much of those kind of questions? And if you were to, how would you respond?
I think as a traditional investment banker, diversification for diversification's sake inside a company very, very seldom gets valued. And we've now got two cases in point where the market didn't appreciate the diversified value that actually sat inside the company. Prior to the disposal of Alliance Medical Group, it was undervalued to the extent, when we looked at the company, it was undervalued to the extent of approximately £300 million. So the investors that were looking for emerging market assets weren't interested in this very sophisticated international asset that happened to be housed within Life Healthcare. And investors that were keen on the diagnostic asset in Europe didn't want the South African risk. So we were kind of trapped. And therein lies the old corporate finance principles that investors who want to diversify will take their money and diversify anyway. They don't need businesses to get confused about what they're about for the sake of diversification. So therein lies the focus that we've decided to bring in this company is the single point of purpose is a Southern African healthcare business. The fact that we've had these assets and monetized them for significant value, I think speaks to the integrity with which the company's been run and the fact that we could nurture these businesses and see and obtain value for shareholders. But we're not a private equity house, and we're not we don't walk around speculating on the next frontier assets. These were in the mix, and they've been managed responsibly, and they've been managed for shareholder value. In the context of the way forward, now there's a chance to show a deeply focused and precise healthcare business in Southern Africa with 48 acute hospitals, 71 healthcare facilities, and 7 adjacent complementary services businesses that aren't just pure hospital businesses or pure hospital-focused businesses, but adjacent to hospitals, and show that we can in fact manage them efficiently and grow them. And therein lies a slightly contrarian view that I carry, Alec, that everyone looks at the NHI as this deep threat to healthcare. The way that NHI has been spoken about has caused the problem. It's driven investors away from us. They don't like the style of the conversation that's been held. They don't like the risk that has been interpreted into healthcare in the banter, in the way that it's been spoken about. But if the objective is to deliver more care to more South Africans, surely healthcare, private healthcare, has got a role to play. I think we're going to get more work because the government can't do this on their own. And for a while, we've said we support the ultimate ambition of NHR. What healthcare company or what South African citizen would not want to see South African citizens well cared for? We're all rational, decent human beings. Of course, we want that to happen. What we haven't agreed with is how the government chooses to go about delivering this. They talk about legislation, they talk about money, they talk about funding, and they talk about centralization. That's not our problem. The problem is, where are we going to get the nurses? Where are we going to get the doctors? Where are we going to get the hospital managers? How are we going to upgrade the existing hospital facilities that we've got all over the country so that we deliver improved care to the citizens of South Africa? I think private's got a huge role to play together with government in partnership. So I think we're going to end up doing more work, Alec, in the NHI world. And we want to play that role. We want to be partners.
I recall having a very interesting conversation with Richard Friedland, one of your peers in the industry. He runs Netcare. And he came up with an idea that was dusted off and previously proposed to the government, which was like a halfway to what NHI is being proposed at. Have you guys, do you support that? Do you have alternative ideas on what could come out? Because NHI is really worrying many South Africans, particularly South Africans who can afford private healthcare, who feel perhaps they are going to be forced to give that up.
In the context of where alternatives present themselves, the proposal that Richard did table did get the support of the Hospital Association of South Africa. And we are part of that association. I think that whilst the absolutes may not all land 100% correctly in everybody's minds, surely dialogue's the right way forward, Alec. And I think that that's where the overtures that are being made about constructive approaches to getting this done, as opposed to fear-mongering or threats as to it will be done, I think is the way that the South Africans have got to embrace this challenge. We have a healthcare challenge. Let's see the challenge for what it is so that we're pragmatic and completely practical about how we go about it, as opposed to rumor-mongering and fear-mongering that basically just drives capital away from the sector. Because without capital, this sector's in trouble. And without people wanting to invest in hospitals and wanting to invest in healthcare, where's the money going to come from? And that's why I think a sensor or a sensibility around the conversation needs to be had. What is in the world of practical? The identifiable objectives that we all buy into stay the same, but how can we in actual fact participate to get this job of work done? As opposed to just throwing everything out all the time where people talk past each other. So yes, I think it was right to make a compromise approach that could see a pathway to NHI, as Richard articulated. But the real essence is actually in constructive dialogue as well. And I think those two hand in hand, our healthcare would support.
So you are now in a very strong position as far as capital is concerned, to the degree that last year you paid a special dividend. Now you're going to pay another $200 million in special dividend from that $350 that you get up front. Where does that put you as far as growth into the future is concerned, and indeed the balance sheet of Life Healthcare generally?
5 years ago, Life Healthcare was significantly was quite highly geared, and that was a straightforward function as to how we were funding the Alliance Medical Group overseas. The initial special dividend, once we had repatriated the money from the sale of Alliance Medical, put us on a really strong financial footing. Yeah, our current gearing ratio is sort of 0.45 times EBITDA, which is for a healthcare group is some would say undergeared. In that context, it means we've got what I use the Sim Chabalala term in banking. We've got a fortress balance sheet, which means that it is formidable and it gives us financial flexibility. Yeah, we primarily return capital to shareholders when we haven't got anything better to do with it. Yeah, and that is... yeah, that is the old maxim that we all subscribe to. In that particular context, when one starts to talk about growth, we'll evaluate our growth opportunities first before we make a dividend distribution. You will recall in our year-end results presentation back end of last year, we announced that we would build a brand new hospital in Paarl. 140 beds, it's a significant investment. It's an investment in a region that requires more hospital beds, in a region where we think demand for healthcare is going to increase as the migration into that particular region goes up. And in so doing, it was carefully evaluated, and we took the view we'll spend the money. There are one or two other opportunities that we're also thinking through, which I choose not to speak about today because I don't want to telegraph the intentions too widely to competitors and the like. But we stay alert to growth opportunities that sit in the healthcare sector. The exciting ones that we've already articulated in some detail are in the complementary services businesses. You saw us make the substantial acquisition in the renal healthcare world from FMC. We spent $700 million during the course of last year landing that. We'll make further investments in PET CT and diagnostic and imaging networks across the country. We will embolden our approach in oncology with more investments in the oncology space. And we will also see investments in mental health and acute rehabilitation. So we've got these pockets of growth that we can invest in. And from a balance sheet perspective, the conservative banker in me doesn't want to see a highly geared healthcare company. I don't like high levels of gearing, but I think it will be appropriately geared and appropriate capital structure in place. So ultimately that the investors see us as a returns generating company. That our return on capital employed during the course of the 2024 year got to 19%. And if we are a returns focused organization with a cash flow return potential with strong dividends, I think that's what healthcare companies should be viewed for. So the history that's delivered these significant payouts, it came from an organization that had a multifaceted strategy, multi-geography and multifaceted. We are much, much more focused, more streamlined, and a single geography for the time being, Alec. And I think that's where we'll set Life Healthcare sails and move forward.
Was that what the board said you needed to do when you were appointed at Life Healthcare, 4 years ago?
The mandate that the board gave me was pretty broad. And in the context of settling the strategy, they were very, very supportive of initially understanding what the alignment was between the actual businesses that we were running and the overall strategy that we were pursuing. there were conversations around geographic diversity, and you could see I've got fairly strong views on geographic and geographic diversification. At the end of the day, we weren't the right owner for Alliance Medical Group. We were funding an international asset, a foreign currency balance sheet off a rand base cash flow, and that doesn't work well. And imaging businesses have all their value locked up in the terminal value. So whilst they were showing profits, we weren't giving returns to shareholders. So there was shareholder pressure on the Alliance Medical asset. And as I said earlier in our chat, and it was undervalued to the tune of about £300 million. So the disposal of Alliance Medical just made complete financial and practical sense. In the context of the board backing the approach to LMI, it was absolute. When Pieter van der Westhuizen and I, Pieter's our group CFO, took the decision not to sell LMI, that came with the full support of the board. And we outlined why it was the wrong time to sell it and what we thought the potential was. We didn't think the potential was as big at that time, we didn't see the potential quite in this category. But we said we would be pragmatic and we would be responsible, and the board backed us. And that got us to Life 2.0. And in the context of the decision to sell, the board has been unanimous in its support for the decision to sell and the timing to sell it. And that's why the board will take the unanimous recommendation to shareholders for approval. So we still have conditions precedent to get through. We've got to go through a shareholder approval process for this transaction. And that gets underway the back end of this week.
Talking about shareholders and what they think of the business, I had a look at the share price, and I'm sure you're acutely aware that since January 2024, Life Healthcare's share price is still down by about 10%. Now, after the deal you did then, and the deal that you did now, and the special dividends, I would have thought that you guys would be flying. What's the reason for this? The main question, I suppose, would be, or the assumption would be, is the uncertainty around NHI weighing on the investor view of the company?
Absolutely, Alec. And that's the high price we're paying for dialogue that is rumor and fear-mongering. That if you look at healthcare assets in other markets, they don't trade at 4.5 times EBITDA. They trade at multiples substantially higher than that. And in the context of what should be seen as a stable stock and a defensive one that's cash generative, yeah, and predictable, we're not enjoying that particular moment of favor with investors because of this uncertainty that sweeps around behind us. So the impassioned plea around conversations around the NHIs, they need to get to a point that's practical and responsible, so that's understandable. I'll give you a really good example, Alec. You stand around the Braai on a Saturday, and people talk about all the specialists leaving South Africa. You know, or that all the doctors are leaving South Africa. Mm. It's absolute nonsense. You know, in one of the 12-month periods recently reported to the board, the number of doctors that left Life Healthcare, either through death, retirement, move to a competitor, and immigration, the number that immigrated was 7. 7 specialists immigrated, 3 of whom returned within the next 9 months. So this idea that specialist doctors are fleeing South Africa is not true. But yet those rumors persist. Things like that don't help confidence in the sector. But by the same token, when we see doctors newly qualified can't find training posts, that is a real problem for the country, because the world is short of doctors. We are short of doctors, and yet they're not being employed. So there are practical steps that need to be taken to be able to get confidence in the sector. And then I think we can have a share price conversation again, Alex, so that, you know, you'll notice that Netcare and ourselves are both traded more or less the same multiples. So it's not company specific that drags the share price down. It's industry and sector specific conversations where the problem sits.
Pieter Wharton Hood is the CEO of Life Healthcare. Great talking with you again, Pete. And that big question mark, I guess, if one does the analysis and says, okay, there's going to be common sense prevailing, as tends to happen in South Africa. We go to the brink first and then we find each other. If that happens on NHI, well, better be doing your homework right now on this company. But congratulations on that extraordinary return on investment for the group on the, as you said, the little business that you bought in 2018 for $5, which has now been sold for $750 million. Wow. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.